Accession number 17975, Egon Brent, Reel 5.
Egon Brent, Reel 5. Are there any other examples you can think of exciting moments
not at the moment, just over the years it gets hazy. You forget these things.
Yes. You were saying...
Altogether it was a very interesting job.
Yes. Were you finding this much more satisfying than your earlier work?
Of course it was much more satisfying. The earlier work was quite a lot of manual, and now it we knew it now it was much more satisfying, of course.
Yes. Did you come face to face with the German prisoners yourself?
I didn't personally interrogate them. Of course, I did see. I sometimes assisted when prisoners came in and when they were put into their cells. But I never had any interrogation. I never talked to anybody. It was not my job. My job was evaluation. There were people specialized who were apart from us where the cells were, and they looked after the prisoners and so on. That's why I did come occasionally, incidentally, face to face, but I never talked to anybody and so on.
Would you say, though, from the evaluations, that the German prisoners were cooperative? Did you find that?
Some were genuinely cooperative, and most of them were no cooperative at all. These specials which were in the cell had to work on them and to get out of them what, and usually it was successful.
And did you just work in the one place, in that?
Mainly in Latimer. At the end of the war, I think I was in the army. It is like that: first comes, first goes. So I was very early. I joined the army very early in January. So I was one of the first. I was with the first batch, 1945, which was discharged. And for the last 2 months after the war, I worked in Beaconsfield, near Beaconsfield. But it was more or less paperwork, office work, mopping up, nothing interesting, and so on.
When you look back at the Intelligence Corps and the work you did, do you think it was an effective outfit? It was an efficient?
Yeah, it was efficient, yes. I mean, all it was not only the army; the navy had their own people there, and there was quite a lot of stuff which just was pushed off to the navy or to the air force, wherever it was needed. And the Americans were there. I'm pretty sure it was quite an important thing. As far as we know, every morning there was something important for the war office, and a copy was sent to Mr. Churchill. We were told every morning Mr. Churchill has a copy of the important things which we evaluated the day before.
Did you know anything about Ultra at the time, the Enigma code breaking?
We knew there were people in Bletchley which were code-breaking, but I didn't even know the name Enigma. That I knew that only later. We had some sort of contact with other prison camps, and occasionally I remember we got some information from Bletchley, but that was just one in dozens of other informations. We knew there were code-breakers, but we didn't know about Enigma and all the that I knew only after the war.
It was very interesting when you were talking about the equipment of the time and how crude it was, you know, compared with today.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, because you wouldn't have had tape recorders, is that right?
No, there were no tape recorders. The forerunner of the tape recorder was the wire recorder, if you remember. Before the tape recorder, there were wire recorders.
A wire?
Magnetic wire. And they worked on the same principle as a tape, as a magnetic tape. But we didn't have it. Oh, that was before, that came after that. We had nothing. It wasn't there. We had just records, normal records, big records, the 78 records or whatever you buy. I mean, the master. We had, of course, the master records. And they were very hard, and the stylus was very hard, but that way it has to be recorded. And then for security reasons, after some time, it had to be just crudely scratched out. There was a job we hated all. There were always two or three people were detached to sit all day long in a dark room and scratch out the records which had to be destroyed. And it was a way to destroy them.
So those records wouldn't be in existence today?
I don't think so, no. Whatever information there was, we had, whether there was something left over, I don't know. But the rule was, whatever was immaterial, whatever was evaluated, it was on paper then, these records were useless and destroyed. Whether the evaluation, the sheets are still there, I can't say. We never destroyed them, whether they were shredded up at one time, I don't know. I mean, the war, that's a matter for the war office to know.
Yes, when you were demobbed after the war, and you were saying how yours came through very early, how soon was it you found out about your parents, your mother, and the rest of the family?
Let me think. Now it took some time. I got in touch with the normal things, with the Red Cross, and they promised to investigate. And some place it took months after that. Let's say half a year. I wouldn't know before half a year. And after half a year, I was sure. No documentation, no number, but I was pretty sure my mother was in Theresienstadt or was sent to Theresienstadt. But that's all I knew at that time. All the other information came later. The latest information, actually, I can tell you, I have only since 3 years, because my daughter and my son-in-law, they were in Czechoslovakia, yeah? And we went to Theresienstadt, and there is an office, and they asked whether there's information. They gave all the details, and they sent me the details here. So the correct times I knew only since about a year. Yes, in Auschwitz all the time, which is not the case. She was sent to Minsk, to the extermination camp in Minsk, and she perished there.
Did you have any idea through the war about the death camps, the extermination camps?
Yeah.
Did you know that?
Yes, through my job, through the intelligence corps. I remember we did see the first photo, which was secretly taken and smuggled to England, with people being shot and the corpses lying there. We had a few photos there, very sketchy, but that was enough to come to conclusions. So we knew what they went something on. Not to the real extent. Nobody expected that. Nobody would at that time expect that people can get animals and just shoot people and torture them and just for the fun of it, or stand on a balcony and just see it. Inmate there and shoot them and fought over. I mean, we didn't think that was possible, even in Germany. But we knew there were these examination camps.
After the war, how soon did you get your naturalization, you know, when you became a British citizen?
Very soon. Let's see, 3 months after that. Because I didn't have to go through the normal channels. Normally you have to advertise on a paper your name and so on. So we had the assistance of the War Office, of the Intelligence Corps. They vouched for us, and it was just one document, and that was about 3 months after I was discharged. Yeah.
Did you have any intention after the war of returning to Germany, you and your wife?
Returning? You mean on a visit or for good or what?
To go back, before, you know, before you were... Did you feel that you...
Don't ask that. We hated it so much. That is not even on a visit. We went for years and years and years. We did not go to on a visit. We go only to visit. We visit Germany in Hamburg because part of my son-in-law's family lives there. He has two brothers who are doctors there, and we go to see them just for that. My son-in-law is the only one of the family who went to England, and the others were first in Israel, and for some reasons they came back to Germany. His father died, and the boys went to university, and the mother couldn't have afforded to send them somewhere else, and she had the pension of his father because he promised from the hospital. That was the reason why they went back. Why they stayed there and never went to Switzerland, I can't understand. I can't understand how people can live in Germany. But they are still there, and we occasionally go to see them.
How do you feel when you're in Germany?
My wife is very funny. She speaks English when we're in Germany. I mean, everybody who goes in a foreign country, he is proud and he can speak this language of the... If I go to Italy, I try to understand at least. I can't speak. But if I go to Spain, I know a little bit of Spanish. I try to make myself understood. I'm proud of it. And in Germany, I can speak German, but I do, but she speaks English. She hates it so much, you can't forgive.
Is that so?
Yeah. The young people, we know loads of very nice young German people. So we can't say they are. There are some very nice young people. But in the back of your mind is always, you have been thrown out, and you know, we wouldn't even accept, if I would have said I want to revisit Berlin, I would have been... would have had very good treatment there. They would put me in a good hotel. They would give me some pocket money. They would give me a theater ticket. They would take me around and so on. As many people have done it and so on. But all on there, they pay for everything. But we are strange there. We wouldn't accept it. We hate it.
Have you been compensated for what you lost?
Partly. My business, I could, because for one reason it was in the eastern sector, and it was very difficult to get there. I could now fight to get something, but I haven't got the proper documentation. And my age, I don't want to do all this extra work and complications, so I leave that. I have not been compensated for that. There was a general compensation for things for lost jobs and so on, which I got, and some compensation for one or two valuable things, but it's not very much. What I get from Germany, I get a pension, Krankenkasse, but what the NHS is here, I paid, as I worked in Germany, I paid every week so and so much, and I get a pension on that. But for me personally, it's quite small, because I didn't work very long as an employee. I had my own business. Now, if you have your own business, you can voluntarily pay. It wasn't Germany like that. You can voluntarily pay. But at that age and so on, you see, if you can't do anything better when you are 60 years or 65 years old, I don't pay anymore. You could do better with your life. So therefore, I don't get very much. That's all.
You were describing earlier, you know, the anti-Semitism that you suffered because of Hitler, and the sort of insults. Did this make any difference to your self-image as a Jewish man?
Because I had no personal insults.
But what had happened to Jews in Berlin?
Some people, I never had actually any personal insult. So I can't answer that question, probably.
But the persecution generally, you know, being Jewish.
The persecution wasn't there, the persecution was there, so you try to avoid it. I mean, the answer is you try to avoid to stay away from everything which could cause problems. You said I didn't stay at home, I lived somewhere else where nobody would find me. And
Did it alter your feelings of yourself as a Jewish man, though? Your sort of sense of Jewishness?
Yes. I felt that my family was basically not very religious, but at that time that came to the foreground. You felt it was the only way to keep you sane also, if you give in to insults, possible insults or so. So you just try to be proud to be Jewish under the circumstances in a very insane world. But to answer the question, I personally had luckily no insults. I knew the people you came with, as I told you, the people who who checked your luggage and things like that. If I would have provoked or something, I would have got my. But I just kept clear of that.
Do you consider yourself, when you think of the Holocaust, a victim of the Holocaust?
I personally can't. Of course, our parents, Irene's mother and my mother and my family, of course, you can't forget that. And I must tell you, now even, I feel it much more than 20, 30 years ago. It gets worse the older you are. We both hate these times, the Holocaust. We both think of the Holocaust more often now than before. I ask myself as well, but probably you hear more and more about it, and you talk more and more about it. And with hindsight, I mean, there is for years there is sort of a vacuum, you don't think of it. And then suddenly, I mean, for you, it's human, you forget about things. You have your life here. We liked England, we had a nice life here socially, and we did see England and so on. And we feel happy there. So that wipes it up out and so on. And then there comes a point which came in only recently, only a very few years ago, that you think back, my God, how can that happen? And that happened with many people, with me and with other people as well. The time and now it comes back and from year to year, actually, it gets worse. That is my personal feeling, our personal feeling.
How about your children? Have you spoken to your children about it and their grandparents? What happened?
They are very interested in that, and they realize that. And what I told you, actually, I know very little about my family. Actually, today people, it's a fashion. They go to the roots of their families, and many families do that. And they ask me, can you write down your family, your father's, your mother's family? And children at that time, they were not inquisitive. Today, my granddaughters, they are very inquisitive. Today we were not, children were not allowed to, they were there and they should be seen but not heard. That was the attitude in my family, actually. And so I did ask very little. And I know about my father's family. My father died, as I said, when he was 51 years old. And I know very little except what I have, some letters or so. I never knew my grandparents anyhow. And that's it. I try whatever I can remember. I am writing down now from my grand. They are very interesting in the Holocaust. They ask me similar questions you ask me. They ask me my attitude and so on. But they realize and they understand. My daughter, my grandchildren understand everything what happened and what happened to me and so on.
Do you think it's appropriate, you know, to have the subject of the Holocaust covered in a museum, such as we are planning in the Imperial War Museum? Is it a good idea, do you think?
I think so. Things like that must not be forgotten. And what is more suitable, what is more practical than just the there's one place, the War Museum, yes.
Mr. Brent, thank you very much indeed for telling me about your Holocaust experience, I would call it.
Oh, it's a pleasure. And thank you for listening to me. Some things probably are not so interesting at all, but just come. So thank you very much.
Your war service, you know, in the Pioneer Corps and then the Intelligence Corps, was this something that pleased you, that you had that opportunity of doing something in the war?
Yes. I wanted to, instead of being in the Intelligence Corps, I mean, that was the main reason. I wanted to do something more productive, more practical, more helpful than just building huts and digging and things like that. Now, of course, that gave me satisfaction, and that was, of course, an heavy.
Thank you very much.